Saint Red, This Year's Month, by Jordan D. White. Episode 1, No Action.
Red Kane closed his eyes, gritted his teeth, and pleasantly thanked the customer for using the particular phone company he worked for. He sighed with relief and sipped his bottle of vanilla Coke as he waited for another call to come in. The room around him was enormous. It buzzed with the sound of hundreds of collection agents attempting to squeeze overdue blood from the stones that were the delinquent customers. The beep in his headset indicated another incoming call. The previous call had been quite an exasperating one. The customer had made payment of the full balance owed right off the bat, but she had then proceeded to tell him all the reasons that the payment was late, for 10 minutes. Mute button firmly pressed, Red explained, "Ma'am, what you don't understand is that it doesn't matter. You lost your job, your purse was stolen, and you've been quarantined for the bubonic plague. It doesn't matter. All that matters to me is the payment. That's what my job is." Having glimpsed the process, even to the limited extent that Red had, he had come to realize that the customers really didn't matter on an individual level. It was all about the system. The company had a system that made them money. As long as you were within the boundaries of that system, you'd be fine. If your circumstances fell outside the boundaries or disrupted the system at all, the company did not care. You are not important. The system is. You could leave the company. Hell, you could even tell everyone you know not to sign up. Business would be fine. The system was still there. There were enough people without unique troubles who were paying their bills on time to make tons of cash. The unemployed, robbed, bubo-covered masses just had to cope with their line being shut off. That or switch to another carrier. But for everyone who swore that they would never return, another would show up with as much distaste for the other companies. The system continued on unabated. Red didn't particularly like it, but he could see it fairly clearly now. Red had been pleased when the woman had eventually gotten off the line. Not that he really expected much better from the next call. He thanked the new woman for calling and took her number so he could bring up her account. He confirmed her name and address as a Miss Ethel Johnson of Philadelphia, PA. "I see you have a balance with us of $336.15.
"That's what I'm calling about.
Would you like to make payment with a credit card or check by phone today?"
"No, I'm not paying that ever."
Okay. Red didn't bother to ask why. He knew that she was going to tell him anyway. Besides, if the issue was anything other than giving him her money, she was talking to the wrong department.
"Listen, sweetie, my long distance was supposed to be shut off."
Okay. Red clicked through her account information. "I'm showing it was blocked on October 21st. That was 4 days ago."
"Yeah, but it was supposed to be blocked months ago. That's why I'm not paying this bill. There shouldn't have been any long distance calls. I told you all to put a block on there."
Red opened his digital copy of the most recent bill to look at the charges. "Let me take a look. Okay, I'm seeing a large number of long distance calls here. Detroit, New York, Port Sunday, New Britain."
"I know, that's what I'm telling you. Those shouldn't be on there. I told you to block the long distance 3 months ago."
Okay, so you didn't make these calls."
"No, I made those calls, but how are you going to charge me for long distance calls when I asked you to put a block on?"
Red blinked. "You made the calls?"
"But I told you to put a block on."
"So you told us to put a block on your long-distance calls, and then you kept on making long-distance calls?"
"You can't be charging me for long-distance calls when I asked you to turn it off. That's not right."
"Ma'am, you're going to have to pay for these calls."
"That's ridiculous. I called back and like..."
"Ma'am, you made these calls. You used the service. You have to pay for it. I mean, when you made these calls, did you expect to get them for free?"
"But I asked you to shut off the long-distance."
"But then you made the calls after that."
"I told you to shut it off. I'm expecting that any calls I can make are not on long distance."
"You were calling different states, ma'am."
"But I called in and told you people to turn off my long distance. Now what? Am I going to be penalized for your mistake?"
"Ma'am, you're not being penalized. You're being charged because you made the calls. You reaped the benefits of our service, and we are not in the habit of giving it away."
"Then you should have blocked my long distance when I asked you to."
Red took a deep breath and shook his head. "Okay, ma'am. I can put you through to customer service so you can dispute these charges and find out why the service was not canceled properly. Would you like their direct number before I transfer you?" He clicked the idle button on his phoning program as he said his goodbyes to Miss Johnson. As soon as he'd transferred her out of his hair, he began logging out of the various financial systems that filled his workday. He clocked out and made his way out the back of the building to his Sable and made his way home. Technically, he did not need to work. He and Allison still had the $1 million or so they had liberated from the overbearing fundamentalists and pedophiles who'd had it before them. Apartments in this part of New York State weren't very expensive. Even Allison's college tuition wasn't too bad. The fake identities that they'd bought were New York State residents, and it was a state school. The truth is, he only worked so they'd have a source of income to put on their tax returns. Not that they were spending very much money, either. They tried to keep their lifestyle pretty low profile, sticking to more humble luxuries like digital cable with all the movie channels. The most expensive thing they'd spent money on was their new names. Allison being a common name, they figured it was safe for her to keep it. She had become Allison Ames. Red had become Alfred, so he could explain his name as a nickname. Allison's sense of humor had given him the surname Coates before he'd had time to think much about it. About 10 months had passed since they'd escaped from DINR International, Divine Intervention and Retribution, the company that had erased Red's existence and made him a saint. They had moved back to their hometown in upstate New York and made a very quiet, comfortable life together, considering it the least likely thing they'd be expected to do when on the lam with $1 million. Red knew there was no chance he'd be recognized, since no one on the planet remembered him except people who were operatives for DINR. But they had been worried about Allison. It turned out to be no big deal, however. The version of her that everyone remembered was a depressive, shut-in goth. After a few accidental run-ins with old acquaintances who had no idea who she was, they had ceased worrying altogether. As for Red's sainthood, there wasn't much to report. It went without saying that he hadn't been martyred, but neither had he done any miracles, or even any of the secret agent-type things he had shown the proclivity for over the holiday season. No, his gun and his sword had hung invisibly off his sides, unused and unnoticed, except when he would bump into them while washing up in the shower. Were it not for his holy good luck coming in handy when he was good-naturedly throwing garbage in the general direction of the trash can, his abilities would have gone completely unused. Red pulled the sable into the parking lot of the apartment building and parked. He lived about 5 minutes from work, making the commute nice and short, which helped not having to get up too early and get ready. Chaser was waiting for him at the door, as he did almost every day, in hopes of either getting cat treats or slipping past to explore the world outside. Kept inside yet again, he purred nonetheless and rubbed his sides up against the can of treats as Red fed him. Allison was curled up in a chair in her office, asleep. On her lap was a book of literary criticism about the book Beloved. She'd gone back to school, a bittersweet activity for her. She enjoyed school, but would have far preferred being in grad school to going through undergrad all over again. She'd been attempting to minimize her boredom by taking a blend of classes she'd never gotten to take alongside one she already knew. It had made keeping her test scores up a hell of a lot easier this time around. Allison's second sight had also been inactive for the past 10 months. Well, she told Red that she prophesied that A Beautiful Mind would beat out The Lord of the Rings for Best Picture, but Red didn't really think that counted. Many film colonists had the same vision. Red grabbed Chaser before he had a chance to hop up onto Allison and wake her. He pet the cat as he walked into the living room. His relationship with Allison was, as far as he could tell, fairly perfect. The truth of the matter was, neither of them seemed to really analyze it much. They had sped off together as a duo and had set up shop here the same way. They shared an apartment, they shared responsibilities, and they shared a bed. They hadn't really spoken of marriage, but mostly because it seemed unnecessary. They had no one to invite to a ceremony, and they didn't need the legal benefits. The only change they could think of it would make in their life would be the addition of rings and the changing of her name to Allison Coates, which held little appeal. Red plopped Chaser down on the couch and went to his computer. He checked his email, which mostly consisted of deleting pornographic advertisements. He then went online to the websites he liked to frequent. Mostly they had to do with television programs, films, and literature he was a fan of. He checked for any upcoming films that looked intriguing, watched the odd trailer for this or that. He'd been hoping to see The Ring soon, but he wasn't sure if Allison was interested. He browsed over to a site of DVD reviews called DVDish.com. For some reason, whenever he would bring up the site, it would tie up his computer resources for a few seconds, causing everything to freeze. After a moment, the site came up. The lead review was of the DVD of E.T. the Extraterrestrial, which had been released the previous Tuesday. At the last minute, the company had decided to include the original version of the film instead of just the new director's cut, from which Steven Spielberg had digitally removed all the guns and offensive language. Red had thought recutting the film had been an incredibly stupid and far too Fahrenheit 451 move for his tastes, but all of a sudden it struck him that he himself had become Red Kane Special Edition Director's Cut. When he first found out that DINR had edited his life in order to get him to join them as a saint, he had been mad. He was reasonably sure he'd been far more upset than even the most vehement of film purists, more so even than a Star Wars geek seeing Greedo shoot first. Over time, especially with Allison by his side, he'd gotten over it. The way he figured it, he may not know exactly who he was or what he's been through, but he knows who he is now, and he's got control over his future. No amount of knowledge about his past is worth giving that up. Still, He wished they'd included the original version of his life at the last minute, just so he could compare. Overall, Red felt the simple life suited him. He and Allison were extremely happy together. He didn't miss being a saint, not that he'd done all that much, but he couldn't help but believe that their little family life here would only be complicated by clandestine crusades and flashes of future woe. In the parking lot next to the building, a car pulled up, blaring Tainted Love out of its windows before the car came to a complete stop and was turned off. From the next room came a shout.
No!
Red leapt to his feet and rushed into her office. Allison, are you all right? What's going on? Allison was standing next to her desk, holding an empty glass. Chaser sat on the desk.
You are a bad, bad kitty. Bad kitty.
What's going on?
Oh, nothing. He just knocked over this stupid freaking glass of water on my stupid freaking laptop.
Allison said, pushing Chaser's butt until he jumped down off the desk. Oh, jeez.
Do you think it'll still work?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Stupid cat.
Chaser had hopped onto the floor and was licking himself clean of the water that had splashed onto his fur. When he was finished, he came and rubbed up against Allison's leg.
Oh, you cute little bastard. How can I be mad at such an innocent little poop?
She picked him up and held him out in front of her, face to face.
You have to learn to behave, little man. You hear me?
Red had attempted to turn the computer on. A sort of sizzling sound prompted him to unplug the device and scrap that line of action. I think it's dead, Al.
Oh, no.
What?
My paper. My paper for Lit Crit. I've been working on it all week.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. It's not due till Monday, though, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll just hop out right now and pick you up a new laptop. You still have 2 days to get it done again. It's not like we can't afford a new one.
Yeah, I know, but I did a lot of work on it. Twice!
It'll be okay. Come on, let's get ready. We can go now. He went to their closet and took out the suitcase that was farthest in the back. He laid it on their bed and opened it. He took out bundles of $20 bills amounting to $3,000, wrote it down on a notepad in the front pocket of the suitcase, closed the whole thing back up, and replaced it in the closet. Allison already had put her coat on and grabbed her purse when Red came out and threw his coat back on. All set? He said, grabbing his keys.
Absolutely.
Red opened their apartment door, only to almost get his face knocked on by Argento.
Hello, Red.
It had happened so fast no one there was actually sure how it started. The computer pod on campus had been fairly full. It was around the time of midterms. Lots of papers were due. Almost every computer in the place was occupied by someone writing about the woman's lib movement, bulimia nervosa, or Hanlett's inner turmoil. The next thing they knew, a van full of frat boys was splashing gasoline all over the place. They had brought in four waterproof boomboxes, all tuned to the same best of the 80s, 90s, and today station, which they cranked up as high as they could. Hate to Say I Told You So was playing as they spread out all over the place, dousing the pod as liberally as possible with gas from huge red containers. They shouted and whooped as if they had just won some sort of sporting event, slapping hands as they passed each other in their dance of spillage. The fortunate part for the other students was that the Greek arsons did not seem to be particularly interested in the other people present. Any dousage of a human being came merely in the process of covering every other surface in the place. The unfortunate part was that some of these surfaces included, notably, computers and computer monitors, all still plugged in and powered up. Fires began breaking out almost immediately, causing the sprinkler system to kick in. Those people close enough to the exits made a break for it. Others became trapped. The four frat boys continued to spread the fire with their canisters. The radio announced that they were in the midst of another half hour of nonstop rock on WAIC or whatnot, and began playing Break It Down again.
Yes! We did it!
Brothers!
Brothers!
What's that?
One of the brothers asked. The tip of a blade seemed to have poked down through the ceiling and began working its way around in a circle. The frat boys put their hands up to their faces to try to see through the sprinkler water splashing down on them.
I can't tell!
Another replied, just as the circle was completed and a perfectly cut piece of the ceiling above them crashed down onto his face, knocking him unconscious. The others all jumped back as they realized that standing on top of that falling hunk of ceiling was a person. Black boots launched off the disc before it even hit the ground, kicking the boy with the lump on his head backwards into the nearest computer fire and sending the figure into a mid-air flip. Touching down in a splash, the newcomer spun to face them in a fighting stance, sword ready to strike.
Hi, boys.
Who the hell are you?
She smiled. She had chin-length red hair, Irish red, not the dyed red one sees so frequently these days. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail, except for a few strands that were being stuck down onto her freckled cheeks by the sprinkler. She wore clunky-looking black boots, tight but worn in blue jeans, and a black baby tee that said Saint across it in bold white letters.
Can't you read?
She lunged forward at the nearest of the boys and swung her sword at him. It passed through his body without harming him. His clothes were another matter, as was the gas can he held in front of him. The gasoline sloshed down the front of his body and onto the floor, where tendrils of the splash made contact with one of the nearby fires, which raced back along the newly spilled gas and immolated the young man. He screamed and dropped to the floor, rolling around to put out the fire. But since the floor around him had been covered in flaming gasoline, it didn't really help much. After a moment, he stopped screaming.
Jesus Christ!
The girl tossed her sword into her left hand and reached towards her ribs with her right, and a handgun appeared in it. She took aim at the big one and fired at his canister, which exploded in flames. While he wailed in pain, the others looked down at his own gas can and hastily threw it in the direction of the girl. She flung herself downward onto her back and extended her foot upwards. She planted the flying can on the sole of her boot and added to its natural momentum, carrying it over her, where it landed in an already burning fire. She leapt back up and away as the fire behind her burst forth much larger than before. She looked up to find the final frat boy was gone. A cry of made its way over the crackle of the fire and the spray of the water. She holstered her weapons and ran in the direction it seemed to be coming from. She found 15 to 20 students still in the pod.
The exits are blocked.
I know. I made my own way in. But don't worry, I'll get you out.
Who are you?
I'm Chelsea. Nice to meet you. Now come on.
They followed as she led them towards one of the outside walls, finding safe routes through the blaze.
There's no way out this way.
There is now.
They stood in front of a concrete wall. She pulled her sword back out, much to everyone's amazement, and sliced them an escape hatch directly through the wall.
Move out,
she yelled, and waited by the hole as they filed through one by one.
Are you coming?
Not yet. I need to do one more thing.
She turned back towards the main part of the room. Going back into it for any reason didn't really do wonders for a person's life expectancy. Still, she had a job to do. The water was helping to spread the fire around more. Maneuvering was getting more difficult. She inched along the concrete wall, the fires being, for the most part, centralized near the furniture. After a moment, the sprinklers were turned off, likely due to the word of the fire's cause. Movement caught Chelsea's eye from far across the room. She leapt over the fire directly in front of her, dove under the flaming table, and rose up to her feet to see the final frat boy cowering in a corner, trapped by the blaze.
Oh, sweet irony. So, are you going to tell me why you guys decided to torch this place, or what?
You keep away from me, you crazy bitch!
Oh, come on. I'm your only possible hope of surviving this.
You killed George and Tiny and Sam!
Yeah, I know. I just figured you didn't look too bright. You might buy it. I'll tell you what. You tell me why you did it, I'll turn you over to the police.
I don't know. We were just hanging out at the frat house, and it just seemed like it would be a good idea. I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know what we were thinking.
You can't be serious. You expect me to believe that you and your idiot brothers were just sitting around and figured it would be a kick to go blow things up and ruin your lives. Come on!
I don't know why. It just seemed important.
This is getting me nowhere. As much as I love the idea of leaving you here to have burned yourself to death with your own stupidity, I don't want to risk the fire department accidentally saving you.
Chelsea pulled out her holy gun, flipped off the safety, and shot him in the head, blowing blood and brains all over the corner behind him. His body tottered forward, landing his newly opened head into the fire.
Ugh, that smells rank.
She made her way to the closest wall and cut herself her own exit from the building. Her sprinkler-soaked body shivered in the cold October air. She clicked her safety back on, slipped her weapons back out of visibility, and hurried off in the opposite direction of the sirens, wailing towards the scene of the fire. Behind her, in the building, she could hear Break It Down Again coming to its close. She pulled her cell phone out of her pocket, tried it. The water hadn't agreed with it. She spotted a payphone off near the student union. She threw her cell out on the way over and dialed one of the phone numbers from those hideously annoying collect call commercials.
Hello?
Argento?
Oh, are you finished already?
Yeah, all set. No one was hurt. Well, except the four bastards who did it, of course.
Splendid.
Yeah, I need you to pick me up. Yes, right now. Unless you want me to get hypothermia.
What happened?
My car's parked illegally in the fire lane. It's going to be towed, probably impounded.
What did you do that for?
I needed to buy a little more time. Make sure the emergency crew didn't get in before I was done.
All right, well, I suppose I'll have to come get you.
Great.
Where will you be?
I'll be right next to the big green sign that says Student Union.
Right over.
See you there.
End of episode.